Between the arms of the Unmaker, it was like an archway, or a gate, though dim and without outline. And through it was neither pale sand nor ocean, but a long slope of darkness going down into the dark. There, the crushed, crawling figure went, and when it came into the darkness, it seemed suddenly to rise up and move swiftly, and it was gone. "Come, Labanan," said Ged, laying his right hand on the boy's arm, and they went forward into the dry land. The yew wood staff in the mage's hand shone in the dull, lowering darkness with a silver gleam. Another slight glimmering movement caught Arryn's eye, a flicker of light along the blade of the sword he held naked in his hand. As the dragon's act and death had broken the binding spell, he had drawn his sword there on the beach of Celador. And here, though he was no more than a shadow, he was a living shadow, and bore the shadow of his sword. There was no other brightness anywhere. It was like a late twilight under clouds at the end of November, a dour, chill, dull air in which one could see, but not clearly and not far. Arryn knew the place, the moors and barrens of his hopeless dreams. But it seemed to him that he was farther, immensely farther, than he had ever been in dream. He could make out nothing distinctly, except that he and his companions stood on the slope of a hill, and before them was a low wall of stones, no higher than a man's knee. Ged still kept his right hand on Arryn's arm. He moved forward now, and Arryn went with him. They stepped over the wall of stones. Formless, the long slope fell away before them, descending into the dark. But overhead, where Arryn had thought to see a heavy overcast of clouds, the sky was black, and there were stars. He looked at them, and it seemed as if his heart shrank small and cold within him. They were no stars that he had ever seen. Unmoving they shone, unwinking. They were those stars that do not rise or set, nor are they ever hidden by any cloud, nor does any sunrise dim them. Still and small they shine on the dry land. Ged set off walking down the far side of the hill of being, and pace by pace Arryn went with him. There was terror in him, and yet so resolved was his heart, and so intent his will, that the fear did not rule him, nor was he even very clearly aware of it. It was only as if something deep within him grieved, like an animal shut up in a room and chained. It seemed that they walked down that hill slope for a long way, but perhaps it was a short way. For there was no passing of time there, where no wind blew and the stars did not move. They came then into the streets of one of the cities that are there, and Arryn saw the houses with windows that are never lit, and in certain doorways standing, with quiet faces and empty hands, the dead. The marketplaces were all empty. There was no buying and selling there, no gaining and spending. Nothing was used, nothing was made. Ged and Arryn went through the narrow streets alone, though a few times they saw a figure at the turning of another way, distant and hardly to be seen in the gloom. At sight of the first of these, Arryn started and raised his sword to point, but Ged shook his head and went on. Arryn saw then that the figure was a woman who moved slowly, not fleeing from them. All those whom they saw, not many, for the dead are many, but that land is large, stood still, or moved slowly and with no purpose. None of them bore wounds, as had the semblance of Aerith Ackby summoned into daylight at the place of his death. No marks of illness were on them. They were whole and healed. They were healed of pain and of life. They were not loathsome as Arryn had feared they would be, not frightening in the way he had thought they would be. Quiet were their faces, freed from anger and desire, and there was in their shadowed eyes no hope. Instead of fear, then, great pity rose up in Aaron, and if fear underlay it, it was not for himself, but for all people. For he saw the mother and child who had died together, and they were in the dark land together. But the child did not run, nor did it cry, and the mother did not hold it or ever look at it. And those who had died for love passed each other in the streets. The potter's wheel was still, the loom empty, the stove cold. No voice ever sang. The dark streets between dark houses led on, and they passed through them. The sound of their feet was the only sound. It was cold. Aaron had not noticed that cold at first, but it crept into his spirit, which was here also his flesh. He felt very weary. They must have come a long way. Why go on? He thought, and his steps lagged a little. Ged stopped suddenly, turning to face a man who stood at the crossing of two streets. He was slender and tall, with a face that Aaron thought he had seen, though he could not remember where. Ged spoke to him, and no other voice had broken the silence since they stepped across the wall of stones. "Oh, Thorion, my friend, how come you here?" And he put out his hands to the summoner of Roke. Thorion made no answering gesture. He stood still. And his face was still. But the silvery light on Ged's staff struck deep in his enshadowed eyes, making a little light there, or meeting it. Ged took the hand he did not offer, and said again, "What do you here, Thorion? You are not of this kingdom yet. Go back." "I followed the Undying One. I lost my way." The summoner's voice was soft and dull, like that of a man who speaks in sleep. "Upward. Toward the wall," said Ged, pointing the way he and Aaron had come, the long, dark, descending street. At that there was a tremor in Thorion's face.